Sorry.
It's good to be with you again.
You always say that.
It's true. A devotee of Ramana Maharshi, who had been with him about 25 years, had a son that died, and he was grief-stricken. So he begged to have an audience with Ramana. Now Ramana rests from 12 to 2. He agreed to see his devotee. When the devotee entered the hall, Ramana was reclining on his couch with his eyes closed. And he started to cry and tell him all his troubles, how much he loved his son. And then he asked Ramana, "What is God?" Ramana didn't answer. He kept still for about 15 minutes. And then he opened his eyes and he said very softly, "What is God?" We'll talk about that tonight. What is God? It's like when someone asks the question, is the world real? The world by itself is an illusion. But God as the world is real. As we progress, we find that there never was a God, so there never was a world. But for the sake of talking, because God is the universe, everything from the lowest microbe to the fullest galaxy is God in expression. Everything is God. Every leaf, every piece of clay, every star, every planet has no basis for its existence by itself. Because God is, everything else is. That's what Ramana meant when he answered, "What is God?" He was trying to explain to the devotee, your son dying, that is God. Your son living, that is God. There's no real difference, only in your mind. We differentiate only in the mind. If the mind were made quiescent, quiet, there would be no differentiation between death and life. We make a differentiation because we think it's a mental concept that someone dies and that's bad, but someone lives, that's good. There's no such differentiation. There is only God. And everything that exists, everything, is God. There can be nothing apart from God. But then I say that God doesn't exist except in your mind. That is the reason that in reality nothing exists. Do you follow that? As long as you think there will be existence, person, place, and thing. But when you stop thinking, there's no room for existence. Because there cannot be the silence and existence. Everything that appears to be opposes the silence. The silence is consciousness, absolute reality, such as Ananda. The self exists as itself. Yet when you begin to modify it, you say, well, God exists. God is the first modification of consciousness. And it's God's job is to create the world. And then to dissolve the world. And then to create the world. Who gave God that job? Henry? Henry didn't do it. Who did? Why would God want to create worlds, universes, and then dissolve them? And after a period of time, bring them back into existence? Yet this is what we read about in all the scriptures. This information is for the Ayani. For the man steeped in ignorance. You have to explain to this man how the world became existent. We will not be satisfied. You therefore go into all the modifications. There is the self, and the self is consciousness. Consciousness modifies itself, and you have God. God modifies itself, and you have existence. Ramana realized that if he explained this to the devotee, devotee wouldn't understand. If he told the devotee that only the self exists and your son didn't die because he was never born, it would be too much for the devotee to comprehend. Therefore, instead he said, God is. What is God? It made the devotee feel better. For he realized that his son was in God's hands. And all is well. But yet, if we have a questioning mind, we question, where did God come from? And why does God appear as all these things? What is its purpose? Most of us know there is no purpose. Nothing exists the way it appears. Your real nature is pure awareness. Pure awareness is the universal. There is no place for anything else. In other words, you cannot have existence as it appears and pure awareness. Otherwise, you would have diversification. As the appearance shows you, there's a beautiful tree, there's a sky, there are flowers, there are animals, there are insects. If pure awareness or the self is self-contained, how can there be anything else? Where would the room come from? It's just like space. When you have a room filled with furniture, what happens to the space it takes up? And then you take the furniture out of the room. Has the space changed? Nothing has happened to the space. The space is the same whether the room is filled with furniture or not. And so it is with reality. Reality exists. The self exists as the self. But it appears as if there are things in the universe. As if there is a universe. There are people, there are animals, there are planets. There's the vegetable kingdom, the mineral kingdom. All this appears as real. You therefore have to ask the question, to whom does this appear? Who sees this? You know by now it's the eye. The eye is the culprit. If it weren't for the eye, there would be no universe. there would be no God. There would be no creation. So Ramana couldn't tell this to the devotee because the devotee wouldn't understand. He therefore said, "What is God?" The world appears to exist. The world by itself can never exist. So the next step is to say that God exists as the world. But I say to you, there is no God and there's no world. And nothing is as it appears. The appearance is called false imagination. And whose fault is it? The I. Blame the I. Whenever you make a mistake, say it's the I's fault. Because there are no mistakes. It sounds funny because it's true. If you did not identify with I, nothing would exist. Things only exist because you identify with your I. Now the grand secret is to follow the eye back to its source. If you really follow the eye back to its source, there is no God. Where would God come from? Even as I talk about the word God, some of you are still thinking of a figure up in the sky. An anthropomorphic type of deity. Who created him? It's the same old question. If God created the universe, who created the God? There is no verbal answer. For it goes beyond thought. You will know the truth about this question when you quiet your mind. When the mind is no longer in existence, the answer will reveal itself. For you will be the answer. Otherwise, there's no answer. But I can assure you, there's no such thing as God. There's no such thing as creation, and there's no such thing as the universe. So there's no such thing as the world. And there's no such thing as you. There's no such thing as I. What is left? Silence. I realize that many of you are bhaktas. And I'm taking away your enjoyment. I'm taking away your God that you worship. Be it in the form of Buddha, Krishna, Jesus, Moses, whomever you like to worship. But I speak at many levels. As far as the Jnani is concerned, it's virtually impossible for a God to exist separate from your soul. But yet, such people as the Sagadatta Maharaj, Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi, and many other Jnanis did bhakti. Ramana used to pray to Shiva in the form of Arunachala. The Sagadatta also prayed to Shiva. So the question is, why did they do that? And the answer is for the sake of others. To get to the stage where God does not exist for you any longer is a very high transcendental stage. I do not expect you bhaktas to give up your worship. As you know, on Sunday we have puja and we have chanting. To whom are we chanting? To Hari, to Ram, to Krishna. I must again tell you, as long as you believe you are the doer, that you are the body and the mind, do not fool yourself into thinking you are not. So if you weren't, you wouldn't react the way you react to situations. So as long as you believe that things are real, then you have to pray to God. Because God does exist for you. You can call God the law of karma. In reality, karma does not exist. Yet how many of us have such reality? Therefore, the best thing for you to do is to practice the jnana practices, but keep doing your puja. Do not give it up. if you're doing japa, whatever practice you have, keep it up. But practice self-inquiry. And as you practice self-inquiry, you will notice something very interesting happening to you. You will notice that little by little, you begin to give up your worship. Slowly but surely. Until the day comes when you become the object of your worship. If you've been worshiping Krishna, you will see yourself as Krishna, and so forth. If you try to act like a yoni before your time, you will have a lot of problems. For you will develop, I don't give a damn attitude. And that's not what we're talking about. I'll give you an idea of how a yoni acts. There was once a yoni who lived in a little shack on a mountain by himself. He was radiantly happy. He was coming back from his walk and he saw some thieves breaking into his house. He crept up by the window to see what they would take. And of course he owned nothing. There was just a torn blanket on the floor. So the thieves started to curse. And one said to the other, this guy has nothing here, let's just take the blanket and leave. So they took the blanket. The next day, he intuitively perceived that the two robbers were caught by the police. So he hurried down to the police station to see what would happen. And when the sergeant saw him, he said, come in. Are these the men who stole from you? And he said, yes. So the policeman asked him, what did they take? And he said, they took my hat and my shirt and my pants and my shoes. And the two thieves started screaming, what a liar this man is. He didn't have anything, he just had a torn blanket. And the sergeant said, is this true? The yoni said, when I put the blanket on my head, it becomes my hat. When I put it around my shoulders, it becomes my shirt. When I tie it around my waist, it becomes my pants. And when I walk in it, it becomes my shoes. Of course, the sergeant laughed and he said, should I press the charges? And the yoni said, no. The two thieves became his disciples. The meaning of that story is, because you're a yoni, it doesn't mean you have compassion. You don't have compassion. A real yoni has more love and compassion than anyone else. But it's not attached to anything. And will be the first one to run to somebody's aid, to help somebody. It sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. For a while, the yoni carries the body. The body becomes under the yoni's jurisdiction and becomes an instrument for good in this world. Therefore, you can never judge a yoni, for you have no idea what a yoni is or what he is. You can see a yoni praying to God just as ardently as a bhakta. Yet the yoni knows there is no God. But does it for the sake of others. So when I tell you there is no God and there is no universe and there is no world and there are no people, there's only absolute reality. Do not take it too seriously. See where you're coming from. Be true to yourself. Do not fool yourself. Whatever you're into, whatever you're going through, if you sit in the silence and practice self-inquiry, things will begin to stir within you. Things will begin to happen. You will find that your feelings change. Your reaction changes. You become less selfish. You develop loving kindness. You understand what this universe is all about. And you are at peace. I feel what we've covered so far is very important. So let's have a discussion about this. Are there any questions or comments you'd like to make?
Robert, do you think that worshipping God or believing in God impedes realization?
On the contrary, worshipping God makes you pure. It makes you pure enough so that you can follow the eye back to the source. Whereas if you did not worship God, you would just know everything intellectually. And you would have a hard heart. Worshipping God softens you up, makes you mellow, kind, causes you to become one-pointed, and lifts you higher. So by all means, worshipping God is good. But what kind of God will you worship? Worshipping God in the form of a Sadguru, or in the form of a Buddha, or Christ, whatever, is even better.
Awesome.
So if you worship God without form, the energy is not as strong. For what kind of a God are you worshiping? An invisible God that has no form, no shape. Therefore, you have doubts. You're not too sure. And the energy you send out is not that strong. But when you worship God with form, you can give that God all of your energy, or totally surrender to that particular deity. That's the purpose of worship, to finally totally surrender your ego, your pride, your body, your affairs, your life, to that deity. And then you become the deity itself.
Is it better, Robert, to focus on one form?
Yes, of course. For you become one-pointed. It causes your mind to become one-pointed. And then your mind becomes your servant. And finally the mind disappears. It's like the sun. When the sun spreads its rays all over the place, it's not as powerful as if one ray of the sun went to a certain place. A fire would start. That's how powerful it is. But when the sun dissipates its rays, they're not as powerful. In the same way, when you worship many deities, you dissipate your energy, and the worship is not as powerful.
Even if you think of them as more or less representing the same consciousness?
That's hard to do. You can't worship Buddha and Christ and Muhammad and Krishna at the same time.
Consciousness. So what,
how will you worship them then? How will you do that?
As a unit.
How can you do it? What do you think of?
The underlying consciousness that they all represent.
If you can do that, that's good. That's wonderful. But I still think you'll think of each one of them and dissipate your energy. Whereas if you have one, they will eventually all merge into oneness. In other words, if you worship Krishna, if you worship Krishna correctly, eventually Buddha, Christ, Shiva, everyone will become Krishna. So it's better in the beginning to worship one. Then the whole universe will become that one.
Could you tell us again? I remember a long time ago when I first started going to classes, you were talking about a vision that you frequently had in which you would encounter
these things,
or entities.
I haven't had vision in a long time. I had a vision that I was flying through the air, and I went to a Ranachal of the mountain. I went through the mountain, there was hell on the side. And when I landed in the middle of the mountain, there was Buddha, Krishna, Ramana, Nisargadatta, and many others that I didn't recognize. We all formed a circle. We smiled at each other, and we walked toward each other until we became one blazing light. And the light turned into a lingam. And then I opened my eyes. But I was aware that I was having a vision. And that's it.
That came to many times.
It used to be, though. It stopped now.
Did you do self-inquiry with that?
No. I've never done self-inquiry.
Don't recommend it.
Why do you recommend it, then?
Because it's the way to go.
You're a cog.
I'm the whole deck.
Why do you say
you haven't
done? Well, if you study with these people from the East, isn't that my understanding? That's what they're teaching us.
I didn't go to them for a teaching.
Why did you go?
I went to confirm my own experience.
But you said you went to Paramahansa.
Sure, because I was a kid. I had my experiences when I was 14 years old. And I didn't understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. So Paramahansa Yogananda explained it to me. And he sent me to India the same way. I'll explain it further.
Ramana didn't suggest that you do self-inquiry?
No.
Who am I?
Never did.
You didn't need it at all, or anything.
Whatever.
How did Ramana confirm your unit of experience?
With a smile.
Just a smile.
Mm-hmm. And most of the things we talked about were mundane. Mm-hmm.
He just knew that you knew and smiled.
I have no idea what he meant.
How did you receive his smile? Did you know that?
I smiled back.
You smiled back. That's natural.
do for the rest of the time, he inquired about my needs. And he wanted to tell him about New York.
Really? What did you tell him about?
I said, New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Did that satisfy?
Sure.
Robin, is it just insight that you can understand how direct and how powerful self-inquiry is? Is it just wisdom that...
I may make a joke about it, but it works.
Yeah. So it's through some kind of inner wisdom that you can, that you know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So once again, self-inquiry is you could breathe in by saying, who am I? Exhale by saying...
No, it's not self-inquiry.
Okay.
And self-inquiry is when you inquire, who am I?
And then take it to as far as
the source of existence, the source of the I.
Last Thursday, you had us go through an exercise which you have us do periodically.
Yes.
And that's to breathe in by saying, who am I?
By breathing the same I.
Or just say I.
And exhale, say
I am.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the one she's talking about, though. You really used to also teach us one another. Say, who am I? I'm
in here.
Oh,
yes.
I'm God.
I'm
that.
I
remember
vaguely.
You said it helped to become one.
Yes. When you inhale, you say, who am I? Between exhaling, you say, I am consciousness. And you exhale, you say, I'm not the body.
I thought you weren't supposed to answer that question. You just leave it silent and open.
That's the other meditation.
This is just a practice.
From this practice,
if you say I am consciousness, that's just a concept.
And that's what you practice to become one pointed. You just bring it to the place where you don't have to practice.
But what you're talking about is not specifically self-inquiry.
No.
It's just distilled in there.
Yes, it's a concept. And that's your one pointed.
But breathing the I am is self-inquiry? Or works the same?
Same thing. All meditation is a concept.
When you breathe in saying I, and then you exhale by saying I am, that's two.
No, when you say I, when you exhale, you say I am.
Okay, I, and then exhale, am.
Okay.
And then the other one is I, in between say I am consciousness and the people left.
No, the other one, you inhale, you say I am I. Before you exhale, you say I am consciousness. And when you exhale, you say, I'm not the body.
And also, just who am I, or from whom comes the I, is the same thing.
That's higher.
So, the answer to her question would be, the question, who am I, is second.
Yes.
And the others are exercise.
Yes. These are all practices that make you one-pointed. And they work beautifully, if you need them.
Now, you say you went to Ramana to have the experiences confirmed?
Yes.
Is that experience, God knows what it's like, but it would, conceptually, it seems like it would be self-authenticated.
It's self-authenticated when I was a kid. So I fought all these things. And I thought I was going crazy. So I went to find out what's going on.
Even when you're not a kid, you want to understand whether you're...
Well, if you're already grown up, you can read the books, and you can do other things.
See local teachers?
But in my day, there were no teachers except for Joel Goldsmith and Paramahansa Yogananda. And people like that.
Was the bliss of the self or whatever, was that part of your experience even though you thought maybe you were going crazy?
Oh yes, of course it was.
So it wasn't
by going crazy, I mean, I no longer conform to my environment. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about my parents. I was just really happy being by myself. I stopped associating with certain friends.
Why would you need that confirmed? That's self-sufficient.
It's self-sufficient, but I didn't know what it was.
Why do you have to know? Does it require some idea about it?
Because I'm still in body consciousness, and the body's got to know. Inquiring minds have to know.
But you know, Robert, you know, Ramana Maharshi, when he had his realization at 16 years old, he was still born to it.
That was me.
And he didn't ask anybody about it. He just went off. He knew what he had. He went off and sat down there in the temple. He went and sat at the temple with a child down below in the caves and didn't move. He stayed there for about 6 months.
That's why prior to that.
He was gone. I mean, the rats were biting his body and everything.
I understand. He was gone. I understand.
Nobody home.
Before that, he went into the temple and prayed to the Tamil saints in the town where he lived.
Of course, he was totally well versed in that whole situation.
Yeah.
He also had a book. Someone in America who has a book.
He had a book too.
He had a book.
So, what you were looking for was a friend, right?
Yes. Because there was no one close by that I can talk to. And if I did what Ramana did, then he'd put me in the psychiatric ward.
That's the amazing thing,
that
you didn't get institutionalized.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Maybe it would help if I wouldn't imagine what they were doing at 14 years old and imagine something like this happening. And what might
problems happen. He was 14 years old and something happened to him on the way. He didn't know anything about religion. He just sat down and started meditating and meditated for 12 years straight. He was walking. He didn't get up. He just sat there.
Well,
there was
a thousand other people
who were there by Copeland. And he still stayed there.
Everyone's experience is different.
Being brought up in American culture, that would be difficult for someone in India. I was listening to Elvis Presley when I was 14.
Did Yogananda send you directly to Ramanuji, Ramana Maharshi?
He suggested I go.
To him?
Mm-hmm.
Had you heard of him before?
Yes. I wanted to become a monk in self-realization. You can only discourage me.
Also, remember, you talked about your experience in the library when you saw the
monk. That happened before.
Was that before?
I was 15.
Also, was that after Yogananda?
No, it was before Yogananda. I was 15 years old.
Why did Yogananda discourage you from becoming a monk?
He told me that's not my path.
You know, there's a monk over at the Lake Shrine. His name's Churyananda. He went and saw Ramana Maharshi. So he saw Ram Dass. You know Ram Dass, the hero?
Papa Ram Dass.
Yeah, Papa Ram Dass. And he went into Samadhi and he saw him. He touched his feet and he was in ecstasy for about a day and a half. And when he came out of it, he said to Ram Dass, he said, "You're my guru."
Mm.
And one guy said, "It's Yogananda's review." And he said, "How can that be? Yogananda's dead." And he said, "Yogananda's review."
Mm.
He said, "That's where he went, where he stayed since then." Strange kind of correlation, cross correlation.
Many strange things that happened. Mm-hmm.
So what did you make of Yogananda?
Great man.
And he had that realization of what I had.
What can I say?
Yes or no?
Can't answer that.
Now, I don't know if it's off track or not, but the Lake Shrine, Yogananda, they worship five or six different Jesus. Why would he spread it out? Instead of just
because they're all on the path of Kriya Yoga. They're all Kriya masters.
It's the lineage of teachers, actually.
Yes.
One was someone else's teacher only.
So they worship.
Jesus was in the Lord.
This thing.
So the object is when they worship Yogananda, they worship the line of gurus. They're all the same.
Yogananda's teacher, his teacher's teacher.
Mm.
We're getting down to earth here, as far as something called love. It seems like from what I'm getting is that I can't really experience true love. All I can experience is selfish needs and security of all these things. To be in a love mode, I have to realize the true self where there is no, there's nothing there.
First, what do you mean by true love?
Well, unconditional. I mean, total selflessness. An open heart. No walls, no. Not worrying about the results.
Then you have to ask yourself a question. Who needs to experience this love? Who needs it? And you'll realize it's the I that thinks it cannot love. When you follow the eye to the source, love will come itself. Because the source of all creation is love. It is the eye that has the problem. It is the eye that believes it cannot love. So inquire, who am I? And when you follow the eye to the heart center, love will come of its own accord. It's interesting, whenever I speak of my experiences, people want me to be eaten by snakes, spiders to bite me. They want me to waste away. Then they'll think I'm a great soul.
You just haven't suffered enough.
Okay.
You haven't laid it on the line.
Tell me it's a great soul, just a second.
Is that true? People really think that you should be, you know?
Because they read the books of certain saints, and they think certain saints have gone through certain experiences, so everybody has to go through those experiences.
We gotta walk on the water or something.
That's why I don't talk about myself too much. The truth is, of course, if you really want to know about this body and about the self in me, know yourself. Find out first who you are. Then you'll know all about me. Otherwise, you'll see me as you see yourself. Do you see what I'm saying? If you meet a con man, the con man is going to look at you and think you're a con man too. A con man believes everybody's a con man. if you meet a person that's full with love, they will see you as love also. So that's why I say, whatever you are, I am a mirror for you. And you're always saying to yourself,
that's so for everything, though, not just for you.
For everything, yes.
Yeah, right.
Of course.
So what you're saying is, and you that phrase, you create your own reality.
Where you are right now, the world that you're seeing is the world that you're creating.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how does that come into predestined?
Everything is predestined.
So you're predestined to create the reality as it is?
That's the way it goes.
Hmm. That seems paradoxical.
Of course it does. It wouldn't be a truth teaching if it weren't paradoxical. Everything is pure and clean, yet you've got to work on yourself to lift yourself up and become free.
There's nothing you can do about it, yet you have to try to do something about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Oh,
that's the game.
That's Maya.
Exactly.
Is it all ego?
And try to figure it out, you can.
No.
So don't try.
And that means when one becomes realized and everything is preordained doesn't exist anymore, right?
Right. When one becomes realized, the whole game is over. There's nobody to become realized. There's nobody that's not realized. There's no universe, there's no God. There are no others. All is well.
It's not a gradual realization.
Or nothing is well.
Touché.
Robert, it seems like it's a gradual realization. But
it appears to some people that it's gradual, but when you awaken, there never was any graduality. It appears like that sometimes. When you awaken, you know that you've always been awake. There never was a time you were asleep.
Robert, for your experience, there must be hundreds of those who reveal their experience and get hospitalized or committed.
This is true.
It amazes you, me, that something in you, if I understand you right, tell you better not talk about this.
You're right.
Something in you knew that other people were not aware of what you were aware of. I don't understand how a young teenager knew that other people weren't aware of what you were becoming aware of. Can you explain at all how you were able to stop yourself from talking about it so you didn't get committed? How did you know
did you get committed?
How did you know it would be inappropriate? Or did someone pull you in? Or?
No, just intuition. In the beginning, I used to ask my teachers about it. And the teacher sent me to the principal. And the principal called my mother. And my mother did take me to a doctor. And the first doctor said I had hay fever. And then I discussed it with some of my friends. And I realized fast I better shut up.
So you went through a process of learning it was getting dangerous.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
I gave you too much credit. I thought you just knew without even saying. I couldn't believe it.
No.
Well, thank God you learned to shut up.
So how can you
keep it? Improve. Even now my family thinks I'm crazy. I told you before, during Christmas, I spoke to my brother that I haven't seen in about 16 years. And he said, are you still good for nothing? I said, yes. Are you good for something? But when I asked him if he was happy, he shut up.
Have you ever been able to, I don't know, Robert, have you ever been able to, pardon the expression, hold down a job?
Not really.
Have you ever been gainfully employed?
Nope.
Good for you.
I have no visible means of support.
How did you pull all this off?
What did he say?
Credit card.
Oh, credit card.
You've been hopping from credit card to credit card.
They said the bank I don't exist.
They're going to catch up with you one day.
In the beginning, I had inheritance. And they spend that fast in India.
Your answer to that in a hurry.
Yeah. That's how you got there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you also become a, go through learn psychology?
Or? Well, that was just question psychology.
Yeah, it's a stress clinic. Yeah.
That's
really
useful.
It didn't last long. It didn't last long.
Distressful.
When I came back to from India, the first time I went to Denver, Colorado. So I was thinking, what am I going to do with my life? So at that time, people trying to improve themselves with good stress. So I opened a clinic called the Stress Clinic. And I paid that in the paper. So I had a bunch of clients. I'm telling them to close down. Because I never registered the business. I never paid any taxes.
Did you teach self-inquiry to people under stress?
Yes, that's what I did.
When did you get some devotees that way?
That's how I started a group in Denver.
Did you de-stress them?
Who knows?
You should know. You were working with them.
I just do it and I look for results.
How many years were you in India?
The first time was 5 years. The second time, 3 years, and the third time, 2 years.
What did you go back for the last two times?
I went back to visit people in that, see some new temples.
Ramana died by now.
Ramana died, yeah. Went to see what was left of Ramana Ashram.
Was S.S. Cohen around there?
Yeah. He was around there. Mm-hmm. S.S. Cohen. Uh-huh. Do a lot of English devotees that live there. Arthur Osborne was there too.
I remember reading Robert in I think it's that No Mind. The Arthur Osborne book about the two, the woman, saint, and the man, and then an anecdote of an Australian chap who was there, and he was just in a laya, and he didn't move, he's defecated in his clothes, and, you know, and by outside appearance, it's like he was in samadhi, but he was dragged away, and he was insane, is that, and then eventually he broke out of it. And sent him back to Australia. But how do you know the difference between being in that state of laya, which is like a trance state, and a state of actual samadhi?
If you're a yani, you can tell what somebody's doing. A yani always knows another yani. And you also know if a person is not a yani.
According to his mind, or in Australians, he was in a state of bliss.
He thought he was.
He didn't necessarily say, I don't think that he was realizing, he was meditating.
Yeah, he couldn't focus on body, he was just simply in a trance state.
He had some physical problems.
Robbie, isn't there the protection? The current or something that protects these people so they wouldn't be thrown into an institution?
Oh, yes. Mary's talking about the current that knows the way. The power that is absolute, that takes care of everything. So if a person is supposed to be thrown into an institution, they will. If they're not, they won't. There are no mistakes, everything is right. Everything is preordained. And everything is happening the way it's supposed to. If you try to figure it out, you'll go insane yourself.
I don't know if I'm quoting rightly, but it seems that I have read in Day by Day with Dharma about Ramana Maharshi saying that it's not that the world is unreal. It is that the mistake is to consider aside or apart from itself.
Mm. This is true.
Is that the ultimate jhanic vision of the world?
No. The ultimate vision is that there's no world at all. And there's no self. It's just a term given to us so we can talk about it. But nothing actually exists like that.
So he was giving a particular answer probably to a particular question.
Exactly. The world is not real by itself. But Brahman is the world is real. But in the ultimate reality, there is no Brahman. So there's no world.
It's interesting how the Buddhists concentrate on being totally present. You know, even more present than here and now. Just totally present. And when it seems like that's the same state. Because when you're totally present, there's no world other that's apart from yourself. And there's no time, there's no past, there's no future. All those things.
Well, that has to do with the bodhisattvas. They will not disappear until everybody else is enlightened.
No, I'm just talking about being present or something.
They will be present until everybody else is enlightened.
No, I mean, being present in the moment.
Being present in the moment.
Yeah.
Explain that again.
Being totally present in the moment is like the same thing as when you're totally present in the moment, there is no world.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yes, from yourself.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. It's beautiful.
If you live in the split second of this moment,
yeah.
Nothing exists.
Yeah.
But as soon as you begin to think, then existence comes into play.
Or be somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But it happens so fast, it's hard to catch.
So that's nice of them. That vehicle is there.
Sure.
That's similar to what you were saying last Thursday, which is just let your body do what it has to do. Because I believe someone who asked the question about if you're working, can you still meditate or concentrate? And you were saying, yes, you can. Just let your body do what it needs to do.
Yes.
When you said when you start thinking, that's when you let the eye or the ego take over, that's when you can't do it as efficiently.
That's correct.
So then just to clarify a point that Jay was just pointing toward, is it is it accurate to say that the experiences exemplified by some of the Zen masters is the same as you and Ramana speak of?
There are just different ways of saying it. But Buddhists become enlightened also. Enlightened.
Oh.
Also. And we've got just a one brand thing here, they're not different. Different kinds of enlightenment.
There's no different kinds of enlightenment. Enlightenment is enlightenment.
So if different words, so if somebody else's words of enlightenment sound different, it's just a mode of expression.
Sure. Because of karma and samskaras, we are inclined towards a certain path. It may be Buddhism, it may be mystical Christianity. It may be Advaita Vedanta. We're inclined towards a path from past lives.
So like a Christian, for example, Mother Teresa, might be suffering.
Might be suffering?
Might be self-realized. And be as a Catholic faith.
I never like to talk about other people. But Mother Teresa is not self-realized.
Mm-hmm.
At least she knows Bengali then. That'll help.
She's what?
At least she knows Bengali, that'll help.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's true. That's a true statement.
Bengali will help.
Yeah.
How about Sanskrit? That would really do it.
She's a great saint.
Yeah. So a saint is not the same as a Yogi.
That's right. The same with Mahatma Gandhi. He was a great soul. But the answer is always this. Find out who you are. And everything else will become clear to you. Another good practice with your breathing is the I meditation. Where you inhale and you say I and you exhale and you say I. Let's try that.